The Nikki Glaser Podcast.
Here's Nikki. Hello. How's it going out there, besties? Oh my gosh, getting so many messages from different listeners of the show who I call my besties because I feel like I talk to you guys like my best friends. Just filling you in because some people are like, stop with the bestie thing. I mean, I think that was in the beginning. People were like, bestie makes me sick. And I'm like, I like it and we're keeping it. And if you don't want to be one, you don't have to. But I do talk to you guys like my best friends. And someone wrote to me and was like, and just said that and was like, I honestly feel like you're my friend. And I said back to her, I honestly am because, yeah, I'm not bullshitting you when I say that I'm more honest in this than I am in pretty much any aspect of my life. Well, that's not true, but like truly, yeah, you guys get more of me than my best friends do at this point. I've been doing this thing where I, hey Noah, by the way, I've been doing this thing where, she just waved at me. I make, podcasts for my friends. I've been doing it for years now. My best friends, and I recommend it to anyone out there who has these friends where you're like, when we see each other, it's just like no time has passed. You know that whole thing where you don't have to talk every day, but then when you almost don't want to call them because there's so much fucking shit to catch up on. So a fun way to process your feelings, and I've talked about this before, sometimes I'll do a podcast to like no one, you know, or to a person that I might, you know, might never even hear it. I don't even think they'll hear it. But a good thing to do is I had a bunch of stuff happen in my life that all my high school friends and like these girls that I often have on girls trips, who you'll hear it that when we do collection of coups, you hear all their voices at the beginning of that. But I had like a bunch of stories happen and I was like, God, I got to talk to every single one of them and tell them this epic tale. And it's just not going to happen. So I decided to make a podcast about like a four-parter series about my story. And like knowing full well, like they have families and lives and jobs. Well, some of them have jobs, but that they might have busy lives where they don't want to listen to me talk about my life where I think I'm more interesting than them because I'm like in Hollywood, which is not what I think, but I'm scared they'll think that I think that because I'm making a podcast. Anyway, I tell them like, if you're bored, listen to this. I'll make it entertaining. And I make a little podcast for my friends. And that's just stuff I would talk about on here and I will someday when there's like, you know, more space. But, and I, you know, I fashion egg the hell out of all the stuff I tell them to you guys. So you'll realize that you know it all already as well. But yeah, I like making podcasts for friends and I recommend you do it for yours and just go like, you know, if you have like a couple girlfriends from college that you don't communicate with anymore, just put them on an email and do an audio message on your phone when you're walking your dog and just bang. And it helps you process the story that you're telling anyway. And then just send it to four friends and be like, listen, if you want to jump in on this, make a podcast episode for me. So my best friend, Catherine, and I have been doing podcasts forever. And she's like, and that's how we mostly communicate is like 10 minute. We keep them underneath 10 minutes because it's just kinder that way. Can't do that on this show. And then we just send them off and it's just so fun. I was even thinking about making it like a podcast in and of itself of me and my best friend, like talking about our lives. And she's talking about her marriage and having kids and like these really personal issues. And I'm like, how can I get this out there for the public and turn this into something that will, I'm like, she probably has to die first, but then I wouldn't, which I don't want her to die, but like if posthumously I could be like, oh, I'll put this out, you know, Anne Frank probably wouldn't have allowed her diary to be published unless they just did it without asking. Like I've always wondered like, I'm sorry. I'm glad Anne Frank wrote things in her diary that weren't humiliating. But if anyone published my diary, I mean, no one would. I didn't say things like, I believe humanity is good. I said things like, I'm sitting next to Ricky in class today and he had a scab on his knee that I wanted to pick. Like, it's like shit like that was in my diary. And I probably didn't even write that in my diary because the fact that I wanted to pick scabs and things like that, I was very ashamed of. I thought it was really weird until I found my best friend, Kirsten. And one day in fourth grade, I found my best friend, Kirsten, because I loved picking things and not scabs so much, but you guys get it. Warts. Didn't know it at the time. But one time I was walking past her desk in fourth grade, and I didn't know this girl. She ended up being my best friend later on. But I looked inside her desk, and she had a Crayola box of crayons, and on it had little dollops of glue. I think I've told this before on the show, and I apologize. I've told it on some podcast. Dollops of glue, and I was like, what is that bitch doing in that desk? Like, whoever sits at that desk is on the same shit I'm on too. Like, I want to pick glue, dried glue, if that's what she's doing, and that was what she was doing. And I felt so less alone that this other person had this weird thing. And that's what the internet is now, right? Like, whatever weird thing you're into, you can find other people that are into it, and it makes you feel less weird. Because how many, like, we should do a segment on the show of, like, stuff you thought made you weird and you wouldn't share with anyone, and then you realize, like, it was very, very common, or that there was a community of people. I mean, isn't that everything? I mean, people are going to write and be like, I was attracted to children. It's like, not that one, buddy. But yeah, what, I mean, that's a whole other, but there are people on the internet that have that same interest as well. And it's, 1/5 of people, by the way, consume child pornography. That's a real stat. 1/5 of Americans, general population, 1/5. It's terrifying. Listen to, if you want some recommendations of podcasts, so you have information about, child sex abuse, in the United States, and it will open your eyes and scare you, look no further than DMing me. Today was a great morning. Went to Starbucks. Oh, this is embarrassing, Noah. Okay, so my morning ritual is, this used to be my morning ritual. I wake up and then I meditate for 20 minutes. I brush my teeth so I don't have a gross taste in my mouth. I go back to bed, I sit up straight and I meditate for 20 minutes. And then I go and I begin my day. And then that used to be before when I did the Sirius show. Every morning in New York, had to be at work by 10. Woke up, meditated, cleaned up all the candy wrappers in my bed of the things I'd eaten the night before, acting like, oh, I'm healthy because I meditate. And then I would go get a latte, not eat breakfast like an idiot. And then, but I always felt so good about meditating in the morning. Now my ritual does not include meditation. And that's good, because guess what? Meditation can come and go. I'm not feeling bad about not meditating, because whoever started meditation, you know, meditation is not about feeling bad if you're doing it, or feeling bad if you're like doing it wrong, or even if you're not doing it. That's why I love meditation. If you don't want to meditate, it's almost like, that's it. That's fine, man. It's waiting for you when you come back. It's not like the gym where you're like, I feel bad if I didn't go. So I don't meditate right now. Could use some, cause I'm all over the place. But, this morning I woke up, pulled Luigi into bed, forced him to cuddle with me, wasn't feeling it, but you know, he got into it as soon as I started whispering sweet nothings about treats into his ear. Oh, his ears just perked up. I'm sorry, Luigi, that was a false alarm. We went for a WLK, because I can't say walk. We went for, because he's in the room. We went for a casual stroll with his leash. Even that word's a buzzword. And then we went to Starbucks. As I'm walking into Starbucks, Noah, I see this beautiful woman out front, like model-esque, just gorgeous hair, gorgeous skin. And she's holding a baby, like probably a 4 or 5 month old baby. She has a toddler that's like toddling around, beautiful toe-headed kid. Toe-head means like bright blonde hair, right? Yes. And she's holding this baby to her like cheek and just like, it looks like they're just like, you know, mother baby cheek, and the baby is just like a little smush. And it was beautiful lighting, and I like street photography a lot. I like taking pictures of strangers. I do it all the time. It's a really good indication if I'm in a good state of mental health, is if I start seeing like beauty in the world and I want to take pictures. But you know, it's a little bit hairy taking pictures of strangers. They might see it. I have a whole system where people don't think I'm doing it. And the fun thing about street photography is you don't know what you're going to get until you look later. It's almost like waitressing. I used to love waitressing because you never knew what the tip was going to be until after they left. And you're like, what am I going to get? And with taking street photography, when I walk by people and I take pictures, I don't look at my phone until later, because I'm doing it I'm doing it sneakily. And then later on, I'll show it to them if I can, if I know them, and be like, hey, can I post this? This is beautiful. But if not, I just hope for the best and hope. And I'm going to start a fake Instagram account, because I used to do street photography all the time on my Instagram account. If you go back to 2012, 11, 10, like really scroll far on my Instagram, you'll see all my street photography. It's all I used to do on there. And I'm pretty damn good. I used to do subway shots. I think I might start a separate account for all of my street photography so that I can get away with it. Because if you are a comedian doing street photography, people go, that person didn't know you're taking a picture of them. That's an invasion of privacy. But if you have an account that's street photography, people are like, that's really cool. That should be a National Geographic. So anyway, I took a picture of this woman, and then she goes, are you Nikki? And I was like, and I had my AirPods in, which have noise canceling, which, by the way, you can't hear fucking jack shit with these new AirPods with noise canceling. How do you turn the goddamn noise canceling off? I know it's through my phone, but I want an easier way. She goes, are you Nikki? I saw her mouth, and I go, yes. I probably screamed it because noise canceling. Yes. And she goes, I did your hair. And I was like, oh my God. And she was this girl that did my hair back in February. And she was massively pregnant with the baby that she's smushing on her face at the time. So I took this picture of this woman. I haven't even looked at the picture yet. I want to see how good it is. She was like, if it's good, I'm going to send it to her and see if she wants it. But it's so funny that I was like taking a picture of this woman thinking it's the most beautiful. Oh, it's pretty good. Oh my God. It's so good. And this is her staring at me. Oh my God. This is the second she caught me and goes, is this Nikki? Noah, look.
Wow.
Isn't that so funny? Look at the baby's face is like, and literally the baby looks like worried. She's staring at me and doesn't know that I'm taking a picture of her at all.
That's a great shot.
Thanks. But the funny thing is the baby, I go, look at this baby. The second it locked eyes with me, its face turned into...
No.
Like almost the crying emoji, like the laughing crying emoji, but without the tears or like the jovialness of it. It just, its face scrunched up and was like, yeah, like disgusted. It was so funny that a baby looked in my eyes and had pure disgust. And it was probably because I was wearing the old earrings that Andrew got me. Just kidding. I hadn't put them in yet. We just put up a poll on Instagram. Andrew and I were eating breakfast, and he was like, put on the earrings that I got you. And I put them on, and I honestly love them. I'm kind of into them. And Noah, I want to talk about it with Andrew in the room. Let's get him in here. Andrew, how'd you sleep last night?
I slept good, Nick. I slept real good. We did get yelled at on my Instagram.
Why?
So we did the video of Reese Witherspoon, or you did that impression, a great impression of Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, I didn't even see it.
On the morning show.
Oh my God, I can't. We're watching the morning show. We're watching Friends. Oh. We're watching a lot of Hacks. I just want to give our listeners an update of all the shows that I'm consuming, and Bachelorette. I want you guys all to get into these shows as well, if you can, because we're going to be referencing them a lot. But the morning show, which you thought was like a new show.
I thought it came out 3 days ago. I thought we were on to something here.
Yeah.
And I wrote morning shows. Is on fire or something, and everyone's like, you're 3 years too late.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Like, Me Too's over.
How did you not I mean, this whole show's, it's not over, but Andrew, don't even joke about Me Too being over. No, it's a really fascinating show. I can't believe it. I thought it was probably a B-, because it has such a stellar cast that I couldn't believe that I wasn't hearing about it constantly if it was good.
That's why I thought it was new, because...
Right. You didn't hear about it that much. But it's so good. Aniston is incredible. It's so fun to watch the first season of Friends where we saw Aniston emerge on the scene. And even though she had been in many things before and been a working actress for years, but to see her first thing she did in her career that we all knew of, and then besides Leprechaun, 1993's Leprechaun, and then
and
to
the one
see
with Gyllenhaal, the good
girl, that was, dude, that was like 2006.
What about it?
But I'm saying, like, that wasn't, I'm saying Leprechaun was before Friends.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she did Leprechaun in 1993. Friends started in 1994-95. She probably filmed it in four, but we're watching Friends, and now we're watching Morning Show, which is the bookends of her kind of
sometimes
IMDb.
When that happens, sometimes I like to think that she just grew in, like, she's
that's who
from,
she became. Rachel Green turned into Alex Levy.
Yeah.
It's really annoys me that the two main characters of the Morning Show, the two female characters, are Alex and Bradley. It's like, it just seems intentional and, like, annoying to me.
Yeah, it seems like...
And Corey is a
binary
girl's name.
Kind of thing.
No, I mean, it just is, like, I think...
Manly.
I want to know she's a girl. I'm just kidding. I don't care. But I just think it was just like kind of kuh.
Yeah.
There's so many fucking kuh things a in the morning show. What did we get yelled at about?
Oh, well, I mean.
So I did an impression of Reese Witherspoon's character, who she's just like a spunky girl who has an accent.
Have her
like
talking
this.
To Jen Aniston. Here, do a like a TV report where they're. Someone got stuck in a well.
Why don't you be our producer? Why don't you be Corey? Okay, so there's a sinister producer character.
Who the Duplass brought, brother.
Who is... No, you're Corey.
Oh, Corey. Yeah,
who's played by...
Crudup.
Billy Crudup, who we then watched Almost Famous because we were on a Crudup, like... Do you know who Billy Crudup is, Noah? He's so hot. He was in Almost Famous. He played Russell in Almost Famous. I put him on my story last night, him and Kate Hudson locking eyes.
That's
when she
how
was,
I know him.
He was a great guitarist in Stillwater, and now he's a producer in a...
Yeah. I mean, he has had an illustrious career, this Corey that is the head of UTA or whatever the hell. Yeah. So if you haven't watched the show, The Morning Show is about a morning show like the Today Show. What's his name from The Office? Oh my God.
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell's character from The Office is actually a morning show host later on in his life.
Is anyone else thinking this is hilarious?
I do.
I think it's so funny.
Okay, so after he left Scranton, Michael Scott becomes a...
he's like, I'm done with paper.
Like a Matt Lauer type.
Yes.
So it's pretty much the story of like Matt Lauer. If Matt Lauer and Katie Couric back in the day when they did the Today Show, this couple that isn't a couple, they're not dating, but they do this show for many, many years, more like a Today Show. He gets Me Too'd. Overnight, he's gone. He's replaced by Reese Witherspoon, who's this like sassy girl from kind of like a Fox News angle, but she's not Fox News. She's just a truth teller out there, just like telling the truth. And Corey, the sinister, executive of the NBC of their Today Show, is trying to get rid of Jennifer Aniston because she's old and needs to be put out to pasture. And he wants to bring in Reese Witherspoon. Well, guess what? Jennifer Aniston hijacks everything and says, guess what? Reese Witherspoon is my new co-anchor, and we're bringing her in. And I know you loved her in Election. She was a sassy little high schooler then, but she grew up to be a fun anchor and Legally Blonde. She also has she passed the bar on Legally Blonde. So this is Reese Witherspoon's character. She's just like, and this is nothing again. First of all, everyone in there acts very well.
Kind of like
everyone's
if Carlisle
a good
became a newscaster.
Just, this show is kind of good because it's just like these archetypes of like Jennifer Aniston's like everyone in the show for the first four episodes, by the way, is constantly in a bad mood. There's like literally not what I said it to Andrew because I was complaining because he loves the show and I was being kind of a brat about it. And I was like, everyone's in a bad mood. And then I saw you go, well, no. And then you go, wait, every single, you,
yes,
I proved you right.
I agreed, but I was saying that Me Too'd is like someone died. And then I asked you if your father.
Oh my God. Andrew posed this question, Noah. This is such an insane question.
It's a very dark question.
It's almost as good as the question that I came up with that I was really proud of if you'd rather be 2 inches taller.
Yes.
And lose a half an inch of penis or have an inch of penis and become 2 inches shorter.
I'd rather just, die.
Just die than even fathom that. Okay. So what was your would you rather to me?
If you found out your dad tomorrow, would you rather find out that your dad tomorrow was a rapist?
Oh,
or that
oh,
he died.
Gosh. Okay, well,
or that he died.
I'll answer this like Alex Levy's character in The Morning Show. Okay, well, here's what I'd say to that. I am a strong woman who can make up my mind, and I need whiskey to get through the day.
Yes.
And I really don't know my relationship with... Okay, now I'm just getting into a character study. Okay, honestly, though, I would probably want my dad to die because... In both scenarios, my dad is dead. In one, he gets to keep living and I get to spend time with him. But my resentment for him, if I found out he was a rapist, would be so much that I would have no fun times with him if he continued to live. So I would kill him myself.
I know, because then you'd have to live with him essentially dying in public opinion for 20 more years at least.
I mean, I just don't see my dad being a rapist.
What if he dies?
It would
and then
be such. It would literally shake my world so much if my sweet father, who like I just know and trust, has never done anything gross with women. Like I just
he called you babe.
I mean, besides that, and kissing me on the lips until the age of 26 when I banned it from our household.
Why did he turn his head?
It's one of my. Oh my God. I don't even want to go into my act, but that's one of my favorite jokes that I do, is that I say my dad kissed me on the lips until I was 26. And well, I do a bunch of other stuff about it, but I go, I literally had to have a talk with him. I go, Dad, we can't do this. And he goes, we kiss on the lips in this family. And I go, well, then why don't you do it to Mom? I love that joke. But it's that was enlightening when I picked up the phone on air and said, hey, Dad. And he goes, hey, babe. And you laughed at me and all of our listeners laughed. Why did we get yelled at last night?
Oh, shit. Back to that. So we left a cabinet door open in the background.
Oh, shut up.
People get mad
about our cord situation underneath the TV, too.
Yes.
I'm never going to fix it because people get mad about it.
I'm going to open all the cabinets.
I keep that cabinets open. I don't know why I do that. I think it makes me feel like I don't know. I just don't. I'm ADD. When I open a cabinet, I don't close it. And it makes for a messier space. Oh,
that,
yeah.
That wants the cabinet. Or they got yelled at by their dad.
Do you remember when you were in school? Noah, I know you know this, too. And you would be, your teacher would erase the board and they would miss a spot or a couple spots. They would do like a haphazard and it would just gnaw on my...
But why does it gnaw on people? Like, what is it with the cabinet?
It just needs... It's OCD.
What happened in their childhood where the cabinet...
They didn't feel like they had enough control. They felt like there's moments that happen, traumatic moments that happen in your childhood that you don't even know. And it could literally not be being molested or being beaten. It could be like your mom didn't hear you when you were crying because she had noise canceling AirPods on or whatever, which we didn't. But like, you know, you were crying in your crib a little bit too long and that for whatever reason, and there might have been like a shadow from a bird flying by that might have spooked you as an infant in a way that set off like a brain chemist, like your neurons fired in a way that's trauma that you hold on to and you don't even know what it is. And so later on, when you see a cabinet that's open, it makes you feel unsafe. Like there's some, it's
also
weird.
Or their parents were just insanely tidy about chores and they just,
yeah,
every little thing like that.
But I think a lot of times it's from kids that came from like disgusting places. And so now anything that is disgusting reminds them of the fact that their parents were like
you
checked
can't
out
win.
And they
you
didn't
can't
listen.
Win.
Honestly, you can't
win. You know,
win.
Either if you Reese Witherspoon down there or down there.
You know, the only way you can win having Bob Saget on your podcast. So we don't do a lot of guests around these parts, as you know, but we got a call and said that, and I heard Bob Saget was interested in being on the show. I love Bob Saget. He's one of my dear friends. Honestly, he's one of my friends. That's a wild thing that I get to say. I truly think that he's nice to everyone and everyone feels like they're friends with Bob Saget because he does have a podcast called Bob Saget Is Here For You. And it's just, that's the essence of Bob Saget, is that he's like this father figure. I grew up watching Full House. I grew up just with a dad that was very much like Bob Saget in that way. Not as emotionally available, but it always like just loved me as much as Danny Tanner. And then I grew up and I met Bob Saget and he is just as wonderful. And so we're going to bring him into the show now. Bob Saget.
Oh, yeah. Hello.
Hello, dear.
Oh, God, do I miss you when I don't see you.
I know.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
Well, we can't see you right now. Your video's off.
Yeah, I know. It's on. I just had to hit a button. And
yeah, you get it. I mean, you still haven't hit it yet. But
I know everything. You know,
I just want to see you.
I want to see you so bad. And I don't know why you don't. Hold on.
There you are. Bob Saget is here for us. Bob Saget Is Here For You is the name of his podcast. You know him as a comedian, actor, director. I know him as a friend. Bob Saget, I'm so excited to have you on as our first official like comedian friend guest on the Nikki Glaser podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much. That was such a long intro. I'm going to give you an answer that is equally as long. Nikki, I love you so much. You are such a good friend. Can't believe I'm the first person on here. I want to borrow some Bitcoin from you.
First of all, this is Andrew Collin. I you guys have met when you've been in my studio for the Sirius show, but he is my best friend and roommate.
I know, and I see everything on Instagram, and it's more than not enough. I need more. I can't get enough of you two together, and he is...
Same with you and your wife. I've loved you with the quarantine content, with you guys doing the TikTok.
It's just Kelly.
Couples.
Kelly says,
I
want to
know how
dish.
Those go down.
She goes, I have a new dish with peas. I go, well, I like peas. Okay, what's your idea? And then next thing I know, I'm dancing and changing clothes and putting on a rubber mustache. I said, I thought I was just going to have peas.
How does that go down, Bob? I want to know, as the husband of a wife who is very active with making content for TikTok and Instagram, which is like, you got to follow Kelly on those things. What is it? Isn't it Kelly Travel?
It's Eat Travel Rock.
Eat Travel Rock is Kelly, Bob Saget's wife's Instagram account. And she puts up hilarious videos and just shares good food and just like fun stuff. A great follow on TikTok.
Like peas. Everyone loves.
I wouldn't know what it's like being the husband of that, though, where it's like you see a shot getting set up. You know something's going to happen. Does she warn you like, I'm going to need you to be a part of this? Does she kind of just like set it up and then throw you into it? Are
is
you
it
part
a weekend
of the
at Bernie it kind is. Of situation?
It's like yeah, I'm the dead she gives guy.
She gives you a bunch.
She just builds everything around my corpse.
How long have you been dead, Bob?
40, 50 years.
Emotionally?
Emotionally, it was probably right before Full House started. And then, no, I was alive during that. I'm more alive now than ever. I mean,
I believe
quarantine
it.
Ended, I triple got out of my coffin and said, it's time, you know, let's make
you
people
really
happy.
Did.
And we just got to see each other, Nikki, thanks to the beauty of media. It's time to tell the truth. Put on a mask. Get tested. This is just.
Oh my God!
It's to tell the truth. We're not bombing Normandy.
Oh my God! That day, that was so funny. That day, we were on to tell the truth together for one episode back in December, and I remember there was some huge news headline, and you go, "How about it?" Supreme Court. And I go, yeah. And you're like, right? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he was like, how have you not looked at your, it was some, I forget. I think it was like Biden won. And you were like, and I was like, what? When I was so embarrassed to not know the news that was on the tip of your tongue backstage.
Biden did not win in December. Although according to some people, he did and then lost in January. I don't know what to believe. Yeah. But it was odd that we didn't know what was going on in the world, or you didn't, or I kind of did. And yet we were on a show called To Tell the Truth.
that show is wild, and I love doing it because you get to meet new celebrities that you would never get to hang out with, and then you get to also hang out with people. I was so excited when you were on that show.
I was excited to be with you because you're funny and you're real. I mean, I make myself laugh as well.
I know you do, Bob.
Funny to hear you both lying right now.
No, we tell the truth.
No, I don't believe it. No way.
No,
this morning, Bob,
it does make me laugh.
Oh. I sent my producer Noah and Andrew a clip of yours this morning because I wanted them to understand how, like, what you were like when you first started doing stand-up. This was the I'm guessing it's the Young Comedian Special, that Rodney Dangerfield hosted. What year was that?
It was, God in heaven, it was 86, I want to say.
Yeah.
85, and it was Rodney's very first Young Comedian Special. It was Sam Kennison and myself and Yaakov and Louis Anderson, and I had him on my podcast, and we talked about it. Do you get frustrated that every person you know has a podcast? Does it get exhausting?
You know what? I am now at the point in my life where I can say no more. Like, we're not doing this.
You're right.
I have one every day. Having a podcast every day is probably why I do four a week, you know, for this show.
It's very cool.
And that's
cool,
my
by
best
the way.
Excuse.
It's also.
Thank you.
Well, it's topical. You're basically doing a radio show in truncated.
That's what I wanted to do. And I just don't want to have to do stand up every night to feel like I, you know, got my emotions out comedically. It takes away me having to go to clubs every night and feel like I got attention and that, you know, the hole that we're trying to fill in our soul of needing to be loved. But
you're on tour though, starting now,
I'm going to start up end of July is when my theater tour starts. And then I'm going to start going to clubs and working on material. I'm just, you know, who knows what's going to happen. It's just, I'm very excited about it, but I'm also like, what am I going to talk about?
You're going to be fine. I didn't know what to do. I mean, of course you're going to be fine. You're Nikki.
No, I'm saying I know just for myself, but I do need to hear that from you, Bob. Thank you.
Well, I just went out, I guess it started a month and a half ago, and I went to places like I opened the Hard Rock in Atlantic City, which is supposed to be 7,000 people, but it was like under 1,000 a show. And it felt really fun. And then I got used to it. And then I went to Dave Chappelle's summer camp in Ohio, which was...
We got to talk about that.
That was so much fun. Oh, my God. You got to go. You got to go. It's just
for... waiting for an invite.
All right. I can do it. I'll do a text when we're done.
But honestly, yeah, let's... Before you do that text, we got to get to the news in a second. I'm going to bring you in, but there's a couple things I wanted to share before I get to the Chappelle thing. First of all, everyone needs... We're going to post it on our story on the Nikki Glaser podcast. Go watch Bob Saget's set from this Young Comedian special that he had posted on his Instagram over quarantine. I was always familiar with Bob's stand-up, but it was before I started doing stand-up, before I respected the art of it. Bob, you watch your stand-up. We watched it this morning. There, I see every fucking stand-up in your stand-up. Like, you influenced, and I'm sure you were influenced by people,
majorly,
obviously.
Yeah.
But you are, first of all, and that's why I love you so much and you make me laugh so hard, because you are a joke machine. It's nonstop with you. You can't go one... Your setups are funny. But I was doing... I was counting your laughs, right? After we watched it once, I go, that seemed like a machine gun, like, delivery. So I started counting them, and then I divided by the amount of minutes, and I took off your intro, and I took off the outro. And you had, I think, one joke every 3 seconds. Like, it was something like a laugh every 3 seconds. You were so fucking funny. That set in 1986 was so ballsy. You were saying things that were so dark. And we all know that Bob Saget, like, was revealed to be this, like, dirty comic after we had known him as Danny Tanner. But, like, you were always this way. But it's not dirty. You were just... You're so smart, so quick. It is a stand-up set that would stand the test of time. You should go watch it now. It's one of my favorite clips.
I'm nuts over her.
That was not my joke. That was my uncle told me joke. And it was because my ex-wife was 5'1".
What's the joke?
I'm nuts over her. She's this tall. And then you hold your hand down.
You said, I love my mom and you can too.
For $12.
$12.
Nikki, when I did stand up on the road, I would build on it. I said, that's not true. She's classy. It's $24. You know, I would I'd always increase her value because that's my mom, Nikki.
That's your mom, Bob. You don't want to give it away for $12. And inflation. You know, she really...
If she's in the crowd, it's $27.
She inflated over the years. And so
We had to give her an anti-inflammatory. But what happened was people took that as me saying bad things. And, you know, when back and I feel bad, there's jokes that I did.
Really?
Well, there were jokes that I did in a 2007 special or things that were said about me on the Comedy Central roast. I wish I could take back things.
Sure.
I didn't want them being said then about me, but I couldn't do anything about it.
Are there jokes that you look back on and you go, that joke doesn't... Why did I do... I wouldn't want to do that now. Is there anything that... draw attention to it.
Nothing but thousands of them.
I know, Bob. There's thousands of jokes waiting to cancel you. And it's same for me, but...
I don't deserve cancelization because I feel bad about it. And I don't think I actually hurt anyone ever. No. And the people that they think I hurt are my best friends. So it's like, you said this about that person and they were a kid. I know, but they were 22 and I'm best friends with them now. And they're worried about me because you want to cancel me. So I'm not cancelable. I just want to do what I do. I come from a place of love. I say the wrong thing because that's how I deal with how bad things are. But But we got to be careful about how we do that, especially now because so many people, you know, the old thing of words matter is what I like to say to my wife.
So how much is your mom today?
I was going to do a sex joke about my wife.
I know, I heard.
But I stopped it in time, and then you brought up my mom, which is, is the thing that will stop any sex joke, my mom.
Yes. Or
unless you pay enough.
I love the way you walk out on stage on this. Can I just play this? So Rodney brings you up.
You could tell he loved you. Is that or it felt that way?
By the way, it's mutual, and it's not bullshit. I really feel that way. So
yeah, you could hear it. So here you are walking up the stage. I love this intro. This first line.
Gosh, you're a wonderful audience. You really are. I'm not just kissing up. I'm really not. I swear. I'm slobbering all over you is what I'm doing because I need you to like me real bad because I have no act and I have no life and I have no future.
I have no act and I have no future. On the young comedian special to open that way is so freaking funny and true and honest. I love it.
But it really wasn't an act.
It wasn't. You were just saying the truth.
I was just riffing without therapy. Therapy slowed me down a little bit. But when I first came to L.A. and I went to the Comedy Store in 1878, Robin Williams came up to me. And I used to say, I have no act, I have no life, and I live in a moped, which didn't make any sense. Because that means I didn't even have a studio apartment. You know, that's how small. But people don't even go to that step now. They just go,
right.
Hey, I own a moped. You've offended all moped people. But Robin came up to me and he went, so first time I met him, 1978, he comes up. So you have no act, you have no life, and you live in a moped. That's a bad impression. And I went, yes, that's what I said. He said, okay.
That is great. I watched the new Apple series. Who Do You Think You Are? Or what? It's the one with Prince Harry and Oprah. It's about mental health. I really recommend it to my parents so they can understand why I am the way I am.
Yeah,
I really want, like, it's one of these things where I'm like, can I buy them an Apple TV subscription and tell them to watch the second episode of Oprah and Harry? Because it's just, it makes it, I think that so much of the time mental health is just like, why did you choose to be depressed? Just like go for a walk and just like snap out of it, Nick, is so much what I heard growing up. Not because my parents weren't like, they're not capable of empathy, but kind of not. And it's something that you have to learn. Yeah.
Well, we had mental illness in our family. My sister, I had a sister that was schizophrenic and
she
passed away at 34 of a brain aneurysm, and she was beautiful and wonderful.
Oh my God.
I had the other one that passed away from scleroderma, which is hardening of the skin. And so my comedy as people died just got worse as far as death jokes and sickness jokes. And then I realized, well, these jokes aren't all getting laughs, so I better take it easy. But when I do my benefits,
and maybe deal, like, did it make you feel like you were maybe, because sometimes I joke about things and they're not getting laughs because people are like, that's really sad what you're talking about. And you probably haven't healed from it. And we can tell you haven't.
Yeah,
and maybe we'll laugh once you've healed from it.
We're running from the problem, like, rather than dealing with it.
And they can sense that we're not over it. Yeah.
And then there's brilliant people that maybe aren't always perceived as comedians that we know who they are. And they get nominated for Emmy and Grammy Awards rightfully. And they're doing comedy, but it's more spoken word, and they're explaining, I went through this, I had cancer, my parents did this, I was a victim of gun violence, and I just don't I don't work that way. It's too painful. I talk that way, like, that's why I love a podcast. I love my podcast because I'm able to talk.
Bob
Saget
is here for you.
Thanks.
I was on it and I had a really good time.
Yeah,
we talked so long. I just love talking to you, but you're right about when I was talking this morning about and just singing your praises to Andrew about, like, this dude, like, is those jokes are so fast. There's not a second wasted. And Andrew was saying, what did you say? You were like, there's some comics that do.
Yeah, well, to build up, like you were saying, it gives it more context, so then the audience understands that you've dealt with it outside of the stage. Are you saying that you go, like, straight to the joke too quick?
Not anymore. I still do to entertain them, but right now I'm on a tour and I'm doing some clubs, like, what is it, West Nyack, Levity Live.
Yeah, you're at Levity Live in West Nyack in New York.
On a Tuesday and a Wednesday. So that's not stuff I would normally do.
This Tuesday and Wednesday, yeah.
It's
or next Tuesday and Wednesday.
Go to the Cellar and do three shows. I want to do a full hour or hour and a half and really work on all the, because it's all new stuff and it's more stories, but I don't, like, there are moments where I love no laughs and then I wait because I know how to do it now. It took me to 65 years old to figure it out. But then to wait as long as it takes to get the laugh because the laugh has meaning. And then they laugh out of, oh my God, you just burst the bubble of my uncomfortableness. I used to not be able to wait and just joke because Right.
Because it's too vulnerable to have a setup and to maybe take them to a place where they could interrupt you or they could heckle or you could just feel too vulnerable. I don't like having any room for people to heckle me or to tell me I suck or to, I just want to be, that's why I talk so fast. That's why I want joke, laugh. And it's a defense mechanism.
But it's also good. I mean, you're doing... I work that way sometimes.
It's the kind of comedy I like.
Well, Rodney Dangerfield told me when I met him when I was like 24 at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, he said, just 50 minutes, man, just one after another, just machine gun it, man, just go. And he said doing stand-up to him was like doing 6 minutes in Germany during World War II when you're trying to get out. And the guard at the border will let you out if you can make him laugh. And you got 6 minutes. That's how he...
Yes.
And he barely...
doesn't want to hear a monologue.
And it's kind of hard to write that, like, a joke every 10 seconds when you're doing an hour. Like,
get
either repetitive or it's a lot of memorization. It's like, it's a lot.
You know, if you... The pros can figure it out. There are some one-liner comics that start out and they got a good 6 minutes and they'll get on the Tonight Show and stuff. And they can't... That doesn't last an hour, but... You can't. I was saying Wendy Liebman is someone who can do an hour of just
Wendy.
Those, like, you know, I just quit smoking crack. And, you know, like, she can do an hour of those. And it's a fun game to play because you go, I don't know what is coming. I like to pause it and guess what she might do to divert it.
Right.
But Bob, your stand up was, I'm seriously, truly so inspired by your stand up and how funny you are. And also how you've transitioned into this, like, more emotionally vulnerable person and a guy who's going to get me into the Chappelle camp, which, by the way, can I just say,
is that still going on though? Now that COVID's
Oh, yeah. They're doing it. Dane Cook was there this past weekend.
I did. I was the first one.
You were there with.
When it went south because there was a COVID exposure in September. I only had one night. And so then that was it. They closed it down. There's a documentary Dave made, which is being shown at Radio City in a week. I'm going to go to that premiere.
Oh my God.
But then it stopped. And then he said, you're going to be Dave Chappelle said, you're the first person I'm going to call when we start up. And damn it, I got the call and I said, I'm on the plane. At first,
God,
I couldn't do it because of my schedule. He's the best in every way. And I got on the plane and then all of a sudden it's my boyfriend. It's John Mayer. It's Jeff Ross. And I'm there and Donnell's there. And
yeah,
it's so
I don't
beautiful.
Even want to go. I'm too overwhelmed.
You will,
at the idea
well,
of being there.
It's all for the right reasons, you know, and it's in a freaking cornfield and there's something organic and real about it. And he was saying Michael Che was
where
on,
do you sleep
in a hotel that you would not normally do on the road.
Sure. Yeah, I get what you're saying. A micro
hotel. You don't care.
You're hanging out.
Nicest hotel there, and you feel
that's kind of what I want. I want to be able to get away from everyone because I'm not someone who wants to hang out 24/7 with comics. Like, I love a comic hang, but I don't want to like sleep in the same house and wake up in the morning and have to like, you know, eat cereal with.
No,
Jeff
I don't
Ross.
Do those. I used to do those comedy condos, and then about 40 years ago, I said no more popcorn ceilings. And then, of course, I stay in like a Four Seasons with a popcorn ceiling, which is sprayed with that.
Popcorn ceiling. We gotta get to the news. We're gonna do a couple news segments before we get to our special segment that we have for you. I do want to say with the Chappelle thing, my last thing is that I was on Fallon with him. He was the first guest. I was the second, and they were like, "Are you okay being the second guest to Chappelle?" And I was like, I can't even just make him the guest, which they ended up doing. I literally had like 2 minutes on air, but I did not care because it was like Chappelle. But I also said to him, I go, because I was doing it on Zoom. I went through my publicist and I go, can you ask if Chappelle wants to like stay on for mine? Like, you know, you would stay on the couch.
Right.
And, you know, it'll be 3 minutes. And they were like, do you know him? And I go, I mean, no, but I've met him at a, you know, Comedy Cellar brunch and he was very nice to me and like seemed to know my name and I'm sure he's heard of me. And so, and we have mutual friends and I think they floated it and then they came up. I don't think they asked him because they were too scared that he wouldn't want it because he ended up sticking around and watching my interview, even though he was done with his at his ranch where he was Zooming. It was so nice. People said that afterwards he was like, where's Nikki? I want to tell her because he stayed on for the musical guest because it was
well, your
one of his friends.
Fell out.
And my boob fell out too. So
yeah, but I saw that and I saw it. I watched every frame very slow. And then Kelly came
you
in.
You know that boob.
Kelly came in. Oh, I haven't gone near it or thought about it, but But Kelly came in and she's interested also. So,
okay, well, that we'll talk about off air.
But I will say about Dave that I was watching Michael Che, who was the guest. He's a guest on my podcast on Monday. He'll be my guest.
And great. Michael Che from SNL.
Oh, God, I love him. And so he was at Chappelle Camp. And so he was at Chappelle's place and Dave kept sticking his head in promoting his podcast. and it was hilarious. He called the hotel that we stay at. He actually said they're changing the name of it to the Colonel Sanders Hotel because it looks like that plantation style. It is.
Oh my God! It is. It's that bad.
It is. No, it's actually lovely. But Dave Chappelle can say it.
Dave Chappelle can say anything. Like literally, you're like Dave Chappelle walked in the room, and I'm like.
Like, oh, that's Dave.
Dave must be annoyed by that, sleeping. Though. Like, get tired, Nikki, that where you don't have to prove yourself anymore.
When you go and when you're able to be around him and for a long amount of time, he's all love. He is all love. And that is that's what comes through. And then besides the fact that he is one of the fun. I can't wait to hook on to him and just use him as a
sucker. No, I don't. I honestly don't want to do that at all. I want to just have
You want to be with the great. He's the greatest.
Can you facilitate it though, Bob? Because when I meet him, I want you there to like vouch for me, and I just want you, Bob Saget. I want you to be here for me, well, just like your podcast.
I will be at all. I won't be maybe physically, but all you have to say is, okay. Do you like Bob Saget? And then he'll hug you for about 4 minutes because we hug each other to the point where it gets uncomfortable.
Really?
And I can't break it, and he gets scared that I won't break the hug.
Oh, I love that. So he's a very like affectionate person with his friends.
With his friends, he is about the best friend you can have. He's a sweetheart.
Wow. And I love that.
And I was there with John Mayer too. So we were going to do a prenup of some kind. There was not going to be any sex.
You're friends with John too.
He's a dear friend.
And you have the coolest friends. He is. How did you meet John Mayer real quick before we get to the news? How did you guys become best
everything
friends?
Goes back to something dark. My dad had passed away and I was doing a benefit for scleroderma and that I do every year. And I did it this year. You did. And we're going to do it virtually again. So I will
do it again. For sure. I loved learning about it and like getting involved and I actually did learn a lot about it, and it's something that needs our support, and I'm really glad that you do it was a joy to be asked to do it, and like I said on the thing, I was like, it is one of the greatest joys of my career that I'm friends with Bob Saget, like truly friends. It really is, and I say that with no sarcasm. Like, it's just like, you know, you're just it's just cool to call you my friend. So
this is my favorite Zoom of the year. I love when I talk Dr. Seuss. Oh, he's canceled. Sorry.
John Mayer got involved with the scleroderma
research foundation, and he had done a benefit for me. And it was a long time ago. Now it was like 15, 18 years ago. And my dad passed away like a week before or something. And he was going through some loss, but he wanted to be there for me as a friend because we just kind of hit it off immediately. And
did he lose one of his watches or something?
No, he didn't have all those watches back then. But I steal one every time I go over his house. And then we went to the Laugh Factory and he wanted to do stand up and he tried it and he had never done it before. So
and
I was his
good and it's annoying.
Well, not the first time. So it was
okay. Good.
It was subjectively difficult. And
okay.
So Jamie still passed him as a regular.
Right. Jamie Masada at the Laugh Factory, who determines who gets on. I would think. Yeah. But John Mayer is funny in that.
He's
really funny.
He's really funny, and his new music is insane. I mean, I actually have one of those. I have the new album. A couple of them have been hits already on this album because they hadn't been released except. But one new song, which I
won't. The Lost Train.
No, that's amazing. He just did that the other night on Kimmel. But there's another one. Well, I'll remember.
Yeah, he's one of the best ever.
He's one of the best guitarists and nicest voice. But he's also a genuine person. And Jeff Ross was there, who's also your friend. You know, he's
just, I mean, these are all people that I love and will get along with. So I'll go to the camp. I'm invited now. Oh wait, no, I'm not. Let's get to the news.
I'll text you.
I'll do it in 10 years and get arrested for trespassing. It'll be great.
Andrew, what news? Let's get to the news, Andrew.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Oh, and I hope you're having a good time out there and having all the swells. Only 33% of Americans would take an immortality pill, and men are more likely to take it than women.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was really wondering what would, if someone gave me a pill that I could live forever, would I take it?
And what age would you pick?
Oh, so you stop aging?
Yeah, when you stop aging. Yeah.
I thought you would take it now and just like be as you. Okay,
no, so like if you're in your 70s, a lot of people in their 70s pick like 42.
I would pick 37 right now. I feel like I'm in my best. I'm in my prime. I feel good. I feel like I've done the work. I feel happy. I feel like attractive. I feel like my body's not failing me yet. And I would actually not take it because I don't want to live forever because I think the world is going to end pretty soon, like in the next 15 years. And I don't want to be walking around a barren wasteland by myself for the rest of it.
What about you, Bob? What age, and would you take it?
Well, they say in the Motorcycle's Guide to the Galaxy, the secret to life is 42. So I probably would have taken it then, but I was having a rough time. I got divorced then. So I don't want to repeat that, but that doesn't mean you're going to repeat your actions. But I mean,
it does actually. There's no free will.
Oh, okay. So it's that way. Okay. So, but if it's like A Wonderful Life where you go back and see what good you meant to the world,
right.
Then
yes.
Maybe it doesn't, you live your life, you don't take the damn pill unless there's complete peace on earth and all the liars and horrible people and torturers online are gone. I'd take it right away. Because then I'd go, wow, it's going to be goodness and beauty forever. But that ain't happening. So I think.
But that ain't happening.
But will I stay erect if I take it?
Yeah. Okay. You can be erect the whole time. You can any
sitting
state.
Up. I just meant sitting upright.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I thought you meant erect.
Oh no, wait. You guys, erect. Well, I'll be erect no matter what.
How old would you be?
Yeah,
what would be the perfect
Bob,
age?
Bob, I want to know you. How old are you now, Bob?
I can't believe it, Nikki. I'm 65 years old. I can't.
65.
Right.
You look amazing. I can't like.
Well,
you make
I,
that age.
I
look,
have a paper
like
clip on the back of my neck holding it together, and all my lower stuff. I had my fupa removed.
What age physically for your body was when you go? That was the best. Like where? But before, what was the age where you go? Things are starting to fall apart. Because I think I am starting to hit that age where like you trip and then like your foot moves a weird way and now you're injured.
Well, it's funny because Dana Carvey has a bit that everybody stole when he had a joke about being 50 when he turned 50. And he said, you know, I broke my arm. How? I picked up the phone. You know, my back. I broke my back. How? I sat up. You know, I got up, you know, and it's that. It's a common premise, but Dana Carvey's actually been a source for a lot of original material that people have just borrowed forever.
Yeah.
But it's true. At 50, there are things that happen to you, but I don't have those problems. I guess in my late 30s, I was probably in the best. I had like a 4-pack at that time.
Whoa.
Hell yeah.
But I was
an 8-track and a 4-pack.
I do Pilates. I do Pilates.
You do?
Yes. That's a woman's name, but I do it. You can't say that. You can get canceled for that.
No, you can say that.
You can say yoga.
I was looking on
can't say that because she's non-binary and you should have said Pilates is.
I like a woman who is binary because that means she likes any number. But but I don't know. It doesn't mean anything. Sometimes you just say something and
that's
on a moped.
What I like about Bob is that in a moped.
Yeah.
Every joke for me ends the way an Avenger lands on the ground at the end of their flight where
they
land on with one knee up, and it has to do with the CGI of it all. It has to.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So they can run it backwards or forwards, but they land.
But you are someone who takes risks when you talk. You say things sometimes and I go, I don't even know. But sometimes you hit a bullseye and sometimes it's just funny at how it makes, like inside a moped does not make any goddamn sense.
No.
Like living on a moped does. In is a weird choice of words.
It's an apartment.
But it works.
It's just another word for apartment.
Yes. I love it.
I wonder why women are more likely to not want to live.
Because our
men.
Lives are worse.
Is that accurate? More women would not want to
more
live?
More women said.
Well, that was out of 900 people in Texas. So.
Oh, that. Yeah, that's the thing is everybody always goes, I heard. I go, what's your source? I heard.
Oh, that's what the joke that I'm going to use forever when that you just said. It reminds me of your own joke. I read this thing. And,
I wrote it down.
You said a fact and you go, that's true. I read it. And you go, I wrote it down and then I read it. But I read it. That
so
is
it
so funny.
True. Well, that's where we're at. That joke has become reality. Anybody.
You need to bring that back. Will you put that joke back in your, like, take all the jokes from
that. I will.
People
I'll
don't
that
know
that
your crowd that's coming to see you now. I don't like this idea of how we have to always have new material. That stuff has not been seen. And now you are such a better comic than you even were then. And you can add more to it. You need to go back and rehash all those jokes. We need to see those. And you know why? Because people are going to steal those jokes, not knowing, because parallel thought. And you need to be like, I was there first, and get them out there again. I need to hear that joke.
Seinfeld did a whole special of his best jokes.
I know.
But I had a joke that I did once on The Tonight Show. And then it was in Newsweek as a cartoon 2 weeks later. No, without crediting me, of course, because it was common thought. Ugh. And then Johnny Carson did it 3 weeks later because one of his writers probably said it because they forgot that I was a guest saying it. The joke was this. It was when they put kids on the milk cartons. And I said they have just... Paul Newman is on salad dressing. This is a long time ago.
Does
that mean he's missing? And that was the joke. But then there's two more parts to it. Then Chef Boyardee, he must be gone for like 25 years. And then this is the real punchline. But that guy on the Quaker Oats box, I don't think we're ever going to see him again. That was the joke. Because the Quaker look of a guy.
I love. Oh, yeah. Years. It's so funny.
It's very risky to come out saying what a good joke that was.
No, it's... I love the layers to it. And again, it goes to an absurd place where you go, I don't even know. But that, of course it makes sense. We're not going to see that guy again. He's been long gone.
But it
he
starts
like
in a very
pilgrim.
Sad place because it's about so kids on the milk cartons. And that was started by a friend of mine who passed away. They were doing a TV movie called Adam. And they went to Washington and they lobbied. Because they had a friend that had lost their child. It was missed. Mm-hmm. The child was missing. And they lobbied and got children's pictures on the milk cartons. They did that in their life.
And they saved lives.
So that's what happens when you do a joke like that. You're going, well, what's the root of that joke? And you go, oh, God, that's the root of it. And so you make comedians do light of it.
Because it's so tragic. That's how we process painful things.
Kids on the oat milk.
I'm doing material about molestation, like big chunks of it on my upcoming special and tour. And I haven't been molested, so it's a little bit like, why do you get to talk about this? But
do you think you should subject yourself to that so you could at least be honest?
I mean, I am open. I'm going to therapy right now and trying to have a therapist like plant it into my psyche. You know how they do that sometimes where they like... make you feel like you've been molested and then they alienate you from your family so that they can charge you a lot, which has happened to me before. But no, I just feel like anyone that could get upset about, I'm not going to not talk about something because it's not like happened to me and I don't have this like green light. I
have three daughters, right? And
we need to talk about it.
Sisters, and we do. And it is one of the most horrific things on this earth. And if a lot of us go, hey, cancel culture is too much. But when it comes to something like a woman's right and they're being violated by guys, because that's how guys have been since the beginning of time, I relish that we're able to stop it, put it out there more. So if all the material you're doing is obviously anti-molestation, correct?
It is. It's pro. If you've been molested, it's not your fault. And like, here's a bright side of it. And it's just about, I don't care if it is pro or whatever it is. The fact that I just even can say the word, like you shouldn't do rape jokes. And I've said this a million times on my podcast, but I just get defensive of it because I think we as comedians should make light of terrible things because it gets us talking about them. Even if it's making light of it and it's like, you shouldn't make light of the serious thing. At least I'm saying the word molestation and putting it out there so that people that have been molested feel less alone. The thing that happened to them is being talked about publicly, because when we put sanctions on things where you go, you can't make jokes about that. It's helping the molesters, because if you keep a hush hush taboo thing over a whole over something that could happen to so many people and does happen constantly to so many people, the abusers win. They win because they get to still work in this world where we just don't talk about that, and they get to keep doing it because the victims feel like, I can't talk about it, I can't joke about it. You can do whatever you want about it. You need to talk about it.
Those people that harm people, especially women, should be put away and they should be stopped. And when you're able to talk about
that's so brave of you to say.
Well, it's the truth. I got too many women in my life that I care about, and I've never even gone. Oh, it's nice of me to say. It's so kind. I get
you're just such a hero for saying that rapists should be put away.
And the award for most anti-molestation goes to. But I mean, you know, anything that upsets us the most, some people don't want to joke about it. And I respect that. They don't even want to talk about it.
I get that.
They want
if it happened to you and it triggers you.
Pizza, you know, but they don't even want to talk about things that would upset someone. Religion, politics.
But how many people choke on pizza a year? Tell me those numbers.
Don't think I wasn't thinking of a penis joke just to just switch that pizza right out.
I definitely have seen people leave the room when I've brought up abortion, miscarriage, all these uncomfortable topics that might trigger someone. And I go, you know what? That girl might go and cry in the bathroom. And I hope that she writes to me and I get to have a private conversation with her about
a private conversation would be great rather than getting an attack online where someone thinks and you don't get to represent what your truth is, which is I care a lot. I'm not whatever you read from some moron. And also, look, there have been so many jokes. I mean, we both love Sarah Silverman, and she did so many jokes over the years that dealt with things that are incredibly painful. And then she publicly said on her podcast that she's also not unlike myself. There's a lot of stuff she said that she would not say today. And she,
I would hold herself responsible.
I mean, there's stuff that I've said to you on here that I would like to retract.
I agree with you. I say stuff all the time.
Pizza.
Yeah. I always just think if I triggered one girl and I'm talking about rape and she has to go to the bathroom and maybe it ruins her night. I know that that's a terrible fallout for making fun of something that happened to her. Or making light of it, seemingly, as she perceived it, because it's her perception and she's entitled to her feelings. However, I would not do that joke if I didn't think that the good it could actually do is more than the pain it caused that one person.
Yeah.
And I always, and maybe I'm wrong, but I always consider that yes, I might be triggering individual people who've been molested and maybe don't want to hear about that right now in their night out. And I should maybe do a trigger warning before my shows. But because that is a real thing and they can't help that they're having like a visceral PTSD response just hearing about it. But I do think the good about me talking about these subjects and what I've learned from my research about them through comedy is going to do more good than that one or two people that might be sad. But they are also entitled to their feelings. Next story.
All right. Should we go to Why Do I Care?
This is our showbiz segment. And we just try to find meaning out of a dumb showbiz headline.
Why do I care?
Why do I care, Andrew?
Paris Hilton said that it felt pretty scary when she once got an offer to make sex dolls just like her.
So the big question is, how much did she make? sale of the doll.
Listen, I would definitely, I love when porn stars have like molds of their vaginas,
right,
where you're like, you could fuck this porn star. It's like, okay, well, that's cool. I wouldn't have a problem making a sex doll for myself if my a mold of my lower half for someone I was in love with to fuck if they were like on location. Like if I was dating someone that like had to be out of the seas, I'd go bring my like butt with you. That would be hilarious.
But what if
you just want to get a mold?
Or if he's mad at you, he could punch him in the legs. You know?
Yeah. If he's mad at me, he can. Yeah.
But what if your director comes over and says, "I just wanted to go over something," or your costumer comes to your room,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden they just see this, you know. Oh, wait a minute. It's him.
Dismembered. It's him.
Yeah, he has it.
But I also wanted a mold of my ex-boyfriends. Like, I've always was like, I'm going on the road. It would be so fun to like have phone sex and actually like have a mold of like what exactly your penis is. And just like for fun, I wanted a stuffed animal of it. I just I would be flattered if someone wanted to do a sex doll of me, because there are people that jerk off to me like and that I don't know that I put up a picture and they'll.
Hold on a second.
That.
My screen's going to go blank for a minute.
you just put a filter on
your
camera.
Would you make a mold of your penis for your wife, Bob?
Would I? No, I would not. And also, I feel bad that I misunderstood, because I had this crazy scenario that a wardrober comes into your room and sees your legs and your vagina. And then that would upset your boyfriend. None of it makes sense.
None of it does make sense.
The only thing that makes sense about it now that I think about it is instead of cheating, someone comes to your room thinking they're going to have their hit on you and do something wrong.
Oh. But
you don't need me. I've got a replication of myself in rubber.
There you go.
Take with you, and I'm out of the equation.
Right. Would you be offended as a man if your girlfriend was like a famous person that guys wanted to have sex with, and she could monetize her vagina by putting out a mold as like a like say you're dating me, comedian Nikki Glaser, and as a bit where I can make a lot of money, I go, babe, can we please, I want to do this thing where they make a mold of my vagina and like these pervy dudes can like say they fucked me, and it's just, it's for a bit. Would that annoy you as a man?
It would upset me to no end, and I think it's a really good idea for merch.
It sounds like you have a lot more money than me, Bob.
No, I
with my bank account, I would make the mold myself. I would let them fuck you.
Well, you know what I'm going to do, because you guys are so great. I'm going to make a mold of my lower parts. And Nikki, you get me.
I just want your feet.
No, you get the feet. But let me
your
just
lower
say
parts.
The other half, my lower parts.
I want your asshole, Bob. Yeah, well, that's what I just
well,
want.
You're not the first person that said that. Because I don't eat dairy, so it's really quite clean.
It's taught.
Oh,
yeah.
I taught it a lot. I can flatulate in any key.
Charlie Puth would be proud.
My asshole has perfect pitch.
Fashion egg. Okay, Bob, let's get to our segment, our special guest segment for Bob Saget. And let me just tell you, Bob, we're keeping this segment titled this for every future guest. So let's get to it. This is Burning Questions for Bob.
Burning Questions for Bob.
This is Burning Questions for Bob with Bob Saget, our first guest for our segment called Burning Questions for Bob. This is where we get to ask, it's a competition of sorts. Noah, my producer, Andrew, my co-host, and myself have all picked out one question that we think will be the best question to ask Bob Saget, the thing that people want to know that will excite people. And we're going to have a competition to see who asked the best question. I think Bob should be the one to judge after we've gone through it all, and to see which question was, whatever best means to you, Bob, in this scenario. So
I just want to say this whole segment is very triggering for me.
Okay. Well,
do you have to pick a winner?
I can't do that. I feel bad for the other people.
All right, Bob, let's start. Andrew,
well,
can
Nikki
you
gets
us
Chappelle
off?
I should get to win this. Okay. You know, yeah, what I mean, true. I think it's only right.
You can win this, and you're getting my butthole, so
that's true. We are getting a molded. I really do want a little, like a almost as a coaster. A for
wait, how big do you think his asshole is?
Well, we go bigger. We Well, I don't know. Well, this is for Red Bull cans. A coaster for Red Bull cans that is just Bob Saget's a mold of your
so
puckered
funny,
asshole.
Because that's how I designed it. I'm using Red Bull cans because they're the.
No, I got a monster.
Oh my God, my asshole goes crazy if I drink this sugar-free Red Bull. Okay, first question, Andrew. Burning question. What is your burning question for Bob Saget?
Oh, so I got to go first. I don't know if it's good to go first, but I think you've probably been asked this before, probably. But so that's kind of already eliminating myself.
Yeah,
but. When you did Entourage,
yeah.
Right? You were seen, a casual fan of yours would know you from, obviously, from Funniest Home Videos and
Full House.
I was going to. Yeah, if I said Home Improvement, I probably would have lost.
No, it would have been fine. You could have said that.
Yeah.
No, he does things around the house. He does Home Improvement. People do know him.
Okay, anyways. When you decided to take that role, because for me, I was
in Entourage, right?
In Entourage. Did your agent or manager go, hey, I don't know if you should do this. You're going to be fucking hookers and doing drugs in this
role.
No,
they said that. They said that when I took the role on Full House. They were kidding.
But like, was that a big deal for you to go, hey, you know what? I'm going to show that I'm not the squeaky clean guy. Or did you already have enough money? Or I don't know.
No, because I'd been the stand-up that I'd been since I was 14 years old, 17 years old. So I already was doing the Full House thing and the America's Funniest Home Videos is a gift that I was doing family television. So it's just called a different speed. It's just a different thing you do. I've done plays on Broadway where I played a priest, you know, not all of them a priest. Every play I do, I only play a priest. But Doug Ellen contacted me and said he knew my stand up and said, we want you to be on the show. And then they wrote it differently. They wrote it where I was more like a downtrodden guy. like a BoJack Horseman kind of guy. And that's not who I am. And some people think that, by the way, that that's based on me. And I talked to Will.
Yeah.
But Will Arnett
said that.
Oh, well, I know, because they're idiots. And Will Arnett said, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're
nothing like me. And you're not BoJack. Don't worry about it. Don't listen to the idiots. So that's
that is so funny. I remember reading that rumor.
Right. But
that,
it's all rumors. And I'm just, I guess, being
it's
known.
Bad press is good press, dude. I mean, take it.
That's really true. Yeah. Yeah.
It is true, though. Don't you believe that's true?
He cuts people's feet off and eats them. That's not good press. You know
that. Oh, I didn't know that. I only saw.
Like, oh, I didn't do that. I started it today, that new rumor. But
oh, OK. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I see. I thought BoJack Horseman. I'm like, that show took a turn.
No. I was just talking about myself. Horse.
Oh, right.
I was like, horse don't even have that kind of mouth. You know?
You do have to cut off your feet because
it is an amazing show, by the way. It's a great.
I would be flattered.
It's a great, great show. But no, it's not based on me because the guy's a loser and sad and all that stuff.
Yes.
And anyway,
none of
that what Doug Ellen said to me is, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'll play it if I can be like a ballsy badass guy. And then he wrote that. And that's what I did like 4 or 5 times on the show. And I had a lot of fun. You know, it was just, but that show couldn't get made now. And I wouldn't act the way I acted, which was quite misogynistic. Mm-hmm. It, but it was faux massage.
But it was a character, and it was a character you with playing my name. A version of yourself.
But it had your name. That's why I wanted. That's why I asked the question because you know, it being your name, obviously people connected it. Oh, this is how really Bob Saget. I mean, he's awesome.
Well, we know how smart people are, so they really.
You fooled me.
Well, but and they always go to is that Anthony Hopkins eats people because he played that in a movie. So you know. And now he's Hannibal Lecter. He was Hannibal Lecter. Now he's the father. So he has, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia, which means that he's still Hannibal Lecter to some people, but he just forgot who he ate.
Right. Then is he really a cannibal anymore? If you don't remember.
I think you are.
That...
I think you are.
Oh,
if,
okay.
If you ate somebody, set them free.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What Bob Saget just always tying it up in a bow that you go, yeah, that'll work.
That's why I played Danny Tanner, because everything's like, it's gonna be okay, honey.
It's gonna be fine.
John Stamos, Uncle Jesse's gonna save your problem.
I know. No, you are, Bob. You're gonna come into my bedroom and give me a hug and talk to me about my feelings, and music will start playing, and you'll help me process my feelings and know that it's okay to cry.
And then I'll realize you're not there. You're on the road, and it's just your rubber vagina and legs.
And Stamos is already fucking it. So,
well, then I run. I videotape it on my phone. And I basically hold him ransom, you know.
Oh my God. I'm Nikki. I was going to make a Tanner joke. I always related to Stephanie Tanner, but I was like, I'm Stephanie self Tanner.
Self Tanner.
If you saw her feet right now.
Oh my God. It's just like stripes of orange. Okay, Bob, second burning question. I will do mine. Bob, who, you don't need to name names, but you can just tell us what you witnessed. What's been
my
the most-
father, and I can't believe it, and it was a sheep.
Okay, Noah, your question's up. No, what was the most egregious abuse of power you witnessed that you can talk about from a celebrity who you may have thought good things about before you met them, and then you go, oh my God, what a monster. I just want to, I love
stories. It can't be you. It can't be you, Bob.
Yeah, you have to do someone other than yourself.
This is like
but-
those, you know, James Corden bits where you have to either drink the hot sauce or...
Right. You don't have to say who this is. I just want to see a behavior of a celebrity you witnessed where you go, whoa, that person is not what I thought, or that's not what I want to be when I get famous.
I can't say who it was, but it was
sure.
It was scary, and it was not what I expected. And the person has, I believe, been met with justice for that kind of behavior.
Oh, good. Because
it could be a lot of people.
I know.
I'm just trying to think.
That's true.
It's everybody but OJ.
That's so funny. I witnessed things sometimes that I'm just like, oh God, or you hear stories and you go, I just want more people to understand that that person isn't what they claim to be. And like, how do they get away with that? How do they keep working when they treat people like that behind the scenes, which behind the scenes is really in front of hundreds of people, like, you know, that all sign NDAs, but you know, things leak and you find out who someone's really is. I just wanted to ask you that because I also have witnessed, it's nice to hear that they've been brought to justice, because I've heard about stories about people and they haven't been brought to justice, and I'm not the one to do it. And you feel kind of like, what do I do? And you just kind of wait, you know, until, and then you breathe a sigh of relief when it finally shows up in the headlines. But it's a tricky thing, because we're even watching the morning show right now, and it's about a guy that got Me Too'd.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, who knew it? And it's like, a lot of people, but like, you're going to get fired if you, we've talked about this immense, ad nauseum.
I know you have a time limit on your show, but it's really strange. Cause I used to go on the Today Show quite a bit. Obviously it's based on that, the morning show. And I'm just going to be honest. I always got along well with Matt Lauer. We had a television relationship.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in that show where they celebrate his 50th birthday. And it's a big scene. I'm not giving a spoiler alert. They celebrate it. So this is really strange. When Matt Lauer turned 50, I was there the day after they had a birthday party for him, because he wanted to talk about what's it like to turn 50. And he had myself, and he had on, he owns the Atlanta, Mark Cuban.
Cuban.
And he had on Scott Hamilton, the skater, and the three of us talked about what it's like to be 50. And
you did that classic bit about picking up the phone and breaking your arm.
No, I didn't do Dana's bit. But I pretty much, I think, just did 2 minutes of prostate material and everyone stared at me. But what was interesting was I was watching the morning show and go, oh my God, if this is anywhere near what it's supposed to be based on, I was there that day after that party on air.
I haven't seen that episode yet, but I'm intrigued to hear the one that you're talking about. And
and I roasted Matt Lauer. I don't like roasts, right? And you've done a lot of them and you're amazing at them.
You've been roasted
on Comedy Central, and some of the Gen Z believe that's the news, that is the news. You know, what someone says about you is real. Because otherwise they wouldn't joke about it, which means they don't know anything about anything, because it's just the opposite.
It's
disturbia. But what happened was I roasted Matt Lauer, and this was obviously pre all the stuff that came out. And if I'd have known all that stuff, I would have had an extra 40 minutes of material.
I know. And then, his office.
No, I wouldn't have done it. That's the thing. If any of that had come out, the roast wouldn't have happened. And, you know, it would have saved me a trip to New York and making fun of, you know, Al Roker, who accidentally flatulated in his pants once.
Oh my God, that was so funny. I will say though, you're right about that, Bob, where people take those roasts as news, because there was someone got canceled or was trying, someone was about to, you know, they were making an effort to cancel someone in an article, and they used one of my roast jokes about this person as like factual evidence of like, see, there's a history. Nikki knew he was a predator. And I'm like, I was just writing a fucking roast, you know, like this isn't, you can't quote a Comedy Central roast in a news article, but you can.
No, but
it just felt insane. So dirty.
They came it after me. Weird. And it's weird because they go, oh, it's true because Bob is laughing at it. The truth of it is, when they did my roast, and I believe you were in elementary school when they did mine, but it's actually behind me on the wall there. There you go. There's the roast up there on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
But what happened was I was sitting there, and Greg Giraldo, the late great Greg Giraldo, who I loved so much. They started the roast. Joel Gallen's directing, producing. And I'm right. And I'm there. He actually produced my Slur Derby benefit.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He just did the iHeart Awards that I did. And I love
great,
Joel.
By the way.
He's the only person.
You're very good in the round.
Thanks, Bob.
No, I didn't mean that in comedic situation.
Oh, right. You were talking about my upcoming lower
film.
Torso.
I'm talking about your porn film with many men.
Oh, my God. Please. You don't know how much I think about that. All right.
Well, one Nikki 40 Cups is the name of it, I believe. But what happened
okay,
was,
so your roast.
To end my story, which I'm talking too long, you shouldn't have me as your first guest. I should have been your last. But
no, you're great.
Okay, you're better. But the thing is, I'm sitting there. Greg Giraldo says that I look like the Vlasic pickle stork with my beaky nose and my granny glasses. And I'm just in shock. And I'm not laughing. I'm not smiling. And Joe Gallen over the PA goes, Bob, try to make it look like you're having a good time.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
And so then I start smiling, and that's what the Gen
and that's
Z
why you
thinks.
Laughed at the one joke, and then that confirms that it must be true.
Yeah, it's true because so, I laughed.
Well, it's interesting that you weren't laughing, because that is a huge part of those roasts, is that you start getting hurt so badly and you forget that you're on camera and that it's essential for you to laugh. For
and it's hurting people that you care about. It's hurting.
It really is. It's not fun. I don't know if I could do it again.
I enjoyed the ones that aren't televised. That was the idea of them, is they weren't supposed to be. The Friars Club and the Maskers in the 50s, I guess. But I roasted Jack Black for the Friars Club, and that goes for charities, and it was 2,000 people at the Hilton in New York, and I always felt bad for what a joke I did about Al Roker, who was there, and he spoke, and he was wonderful, but it was right around the time where he was so brave to come out and talk about what happens if you can't control your bowels, and he'd had an accident, so I said, as the host, if anybody has to go to the bathroom, please use Al Roker's pants.
Hilarious.
So, you know,
I bet he loved that. Al Roker has a great sense of humor, from what I can tell.
He is amazing. He came up to me and he went, Bob. I went, Al, I'm sorry. It just happened. It's 3 days old, this news. I said, it's okay to hug you or will stuff come out?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And that's, and I've since been on his show. I mean, he is one of the sweetest people on the earth.
Yeah, he seems like it. I love Al Roker. Okay, Noah, let's round this out. Bob, burning questions for Bob with Bob Saget. What is your burning question, Noah?
My burning question is, I'm going to assume that you slid into your wife's DMs, Kelly of E! Travel Rock. And I would like to know, what was the line that got her to respond?
You're very sweet. That was an easy Googleable one too. That's
oh really?
Yeah, there's an article about it that I slid into her DMs, which sounds horrific. That's so crude. But what happened was we had
that's
a
how you do it.
I actually saw her. I was on that dating site Raya for a moment.
Yep.
The only person they patched me up with was Courtney Love, and so because I put my real age and I didn't lie and I was out of relationships. And I was just sad. And so I had a Jackson.
I'm on Raya. I've been on there for fucking 10 years, I think. Well, so no judgment here.
No, right? But I love it.
Yeah.
I was on it literally for 2 months, but I was on there.
Yeah.
And it was just depressing music of me just like in the woods by myself.
Dude.
It just looked like a joke. It was like Jack Handy. It was
that is so funny. Because if people don't know, on Raya, you need to pick a song and then you pick all these pictures and your photos, like, you know, fade into one another like this, like a funeral slideshow for someone. Maybe. And for Bob to pick a sad song with just him in the woods is so funny. You're on Raya.
It left me alone. But I had been matched up with this person, Kelly Rizzo. And I looked at her and she was, you know, she was a producer of segments. She'd been on a lot of TV shows. And then it lets you click on someone's Instagram. And she's just a decent, good person from Chicago. And then I went, well, she's in media. So I contacted Ro Khan, who's a radio and television person in Chicago. And I said, do you know Kelly Rizzo? He said, yeah. I said, is she nice? He said, she's a great gal. I said, well, I'm not matching up with her because she probably wants someone that's younger and not me with depressing music. And he said, in the woods and skiing by myself on the slopes. And
so this is where they got BoJack from.
That would have made sense. That would have made sense. Well, that was just depressed over a relationship, not over being a drunken has-been, but, and a horse. But what happened was he asked her, is it okay if Bob Saget, I asked permission, may I send her a direct message on Instagram? And she said, sure, that'd be okay. What does he want? And he said, well, I have a feeling that he likes you, but he doesn't know you. So he just wanted to know. And so my line, to answer your question from 400 minutes ago, hey, it's Bob. Roe gave me, said it was okay to direct message you, which means, Nikki, I asked for permission. It wasn't like I did anything stalky or weird, but it still felt weird.
Nothing about this is weird, even if you didn't ask permission.
It is funny
because you matched with her.
You combined old school with new school. Like, you matched with her on Raya. You could have wrote a message there.
No,
like,
I didn't
second.
Match because I met.
Okay. You just saw her on there and your age, and she did not have her age limit set to what you are because she's a younger lady. She's 30.
Okay.
She's in her 30s.
She's 42.
She is?
Yeah.
Oh my God, she should tell her fucking body.
Well, she's pretty great.
Make a mold of it for us.
When we're done here, I'm making a mold. But
please.
But what happened is then I just direct messaged her something like, hey, if you're ever in LA, I'll buy you 25 hamburgers because she's quite a foodie, and or I'll buy you 5 lobsters. I was like, I assumed that she ate like fat bastard, apparently. I don't know what I was doing. I was offering immense amounts of food. And I said, I hope this isn't weird. You know, I'm sorry if this was, but Rose said it was cool. And then she said, well, in fact, I'll be in LA in like 2 weeks. And then she had her entourage of people, her producer of stuff she was filming and someone else. So I went to dinner with her 3 nights in a row with her friends. And nothing really, I think nothing. There was one kiss, an awkward kiss at the end of one evening. And I thought, well, this isn't happening. And that's cool because I've never been a predator. People have thought that I've been because that's the swaggery image that I put out because I was single. I've been divorced from my first wife for 23 years or something. Mm. And so she said, are you coming to dinner tomorrow night? I went, well, I don't think so because I thought there was something going on maybe. And I'm happy to be your friend, which I never really said with earnestness.
But I meant it.
And that meant I'm growing up and I was in therapy trying to figure out how to treat people better and treat myself better and not sever things just because you got rejected. I didn't get rejected. She was nice as hell. So then I said, well, I'm not going to go because I don't think you feel that way about me. And it's cool. She said, what if I do feel that way about you? And I said, what time's dinner?
Oh, yes. That's so cute.
And then we have not been apart since. That was,
oh my God.
She just moved to LA? Or you dated long distance? Not right away.
Our first date was in Las Vegas a couple weeks later. And it was really fun. It was hilariously funny. And then we went to Absinthe. You got to go see that show if you're on a date.
Okay.
Nikki, you bring your torso. Yeah. It's and then we I don't know what we did. We went to Excess at the Encore, at the Wynn. I don't know. And she's like, but we're in the DJ booth. We can't see anything. And I said, just wait a second. And then all of a sudden T-Pain said, come on up here, Bob. And then the hydraulics started. And we got to Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, we got to watch the end of the world. But
I love that story. I feel like I don't know. I'm going to call it. I think I like Noah's question the best. It got
it's just like a side of Bob. But it's cheating that she picked that.
She didn't know.
Because he's not going to go against his wife.
What do you mean go against?
that's the question.
Well, it's Nikki choosing. Yeah. I don't know why I'm choosing. I just like...
No, Bob's choosing.
Oh, yeah, Bob. What question was your favorite?
The one that I answered with the least amount of time, and I don't know if it's possible to clock the shortest answer. Can you just ask me something really quick, and I'll answer with a yes or no, and that'll be...
You like cheese?
Sometimes. That's my favorite question.
Oh, okay. There we go. There we have it. That will always round out our burning questions Bob is, do you like cheese?
I won.
And sometimes he does. And that's why his asshole is going to be available in coasters very soon because he sometimes enjoys dairy. Now let's move into the final thought. Bob Saget, thank you so much for being with us. You can go see Bob Saget live, which you know I can't recommend enough right now. I mean, he is going to be in, let's see where you are.
Well, I'm going to be everywhere. They can just go to BobSaget.com.
Go to BobSaget.com Tuesday, Wednesday at Levity Live in New York. You can see Bob Saget, but he's all over the place, BobSaget.com. And make sure to subscribe to Bob Saget is here for you, his podcast. And follow his wife, Kelly, Eat Travel Rock on Instagram, and you'll see lots of Bob content there. Thank you guys so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Bob Saget, our first guest.
All right, guys, we will see you tomorrow for our final show of the week.
And I'm going to go cut some cheese.
Sometimes.
In a moped.
Let's pick a different edit point for the owl.
No, that's perfect. We love you.
I love you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Kuh.
Kuh.
Kuh.